So we've gathered on this longest night by the power of She-Wolf, who precedes Scheherazade, to help Scheherazade in her task, liberated from fiction, to save the world. So many of us may know, thank you for the flowers, and the last time when I was in Berkeley also someone handed me flowers with a note that said, thank you for not giving up on beauty. So we'd say that to all of us here, thank all of us for not giving up on beauty. Because we've gathered to address the core issues of conflict in the world, in our own hearts and in the larger aspects of creation too, to restore intimacy, intimacy with this night, that we may become agents of intimacy. So many of us know this frame story of Scheherazade, who is the quintessential compassionate trickster indeed, because She-Wolf becomes Scheherazade. And Scheherazade, what she does is she liberates, she lifts the curse from the land, liberates all women, and liberates even the tyrant from his own spell. So with that in mind, we know the frame story, basically, of the Thousand and One Nights that we want to invoke. And what it is that King Shahryar and his brother discovers his wife cuckolding with a man with an enormous gong, and that's made of great import. And so he cuts both of them in quarters and rides off to go greet his brother. But his brother notices, Shahryar notices that his brother looks, you know, grim and unhappy for some reason, but he won't say why. And Shahryar goes off hunting, and meanwhile his brother secretes himself in a private room off of the pleasure garden, and he sees Shahryar's wife come in, and 20 dancing girls, the concubines, and they close the gates to the garden, and 10 of the dancing girls take off their costumes, and they are virile guys, and they all get it on, and Shahryar's wife says, yes, and come to me, oh great, and this great strapping man comes, and they make love for hours and hours and hours, and this cheers up Shahryar's brother for no end, and Shahryar says, upon seeing the countenance of his brother lifted and glowing once again, why, you've regained your health. And his brother says to him, don't ask me why. and King Shahryar says, I will ask you why, on pain of death, even though you're my brother, because we're in these tales and we do that. And because we are not intimate with the world, and we're hasty in our actions, and whoops, off with their head, oops, a mistake. So Shahryar's brother reveals it to him, and Shahryar hides himself and sees this too, and then he has them all put to death and goes, ah, fooey on all women, ah, it's terrible. And I will never trust women again, so I will each night marry a virgin, bed her, and then at dawn I will behead her. And that way I'll be safe. Ah. So the land is getting pretty thin of virgins, and a great pall has fallen on the land. And Scheherazade is the daughter of the Grand Wazir. She's She-Wolf, but she's disguised as Scheherazade, the daughter of the Grand Wazir. And she says, Father, you know, I will volunteer to marry King Shahryar. Oh, no, 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 yes, I will. So she does. And she says, Scheherazade means city freer and or lion-hearted. And her sister, Dunyazid, is called world freer. We're entering into the realm of the women saviors through this story, through this portal. And so Scheherazade says to her sister, after I've bedded the king, do come in and entreat me to tell a story, because that is my specialty. I've spent my whole life devoted to stories. And Dunyazad says, gladly. And so the way it wends its way is that Scheherazade begins a tale that is so interesting that as dawn comes and Scheherazade perceives the dawn of day and ceases to say her permitted say, right in the middle of the story. And King Shahryar says, well, what's another night? That won't hurt. Ah, goes on for 1,001 nights, of course, by which time they've had 3 children. And he does see, you know, his ways. Oh, I've been an idiot. I've been a fool, you know. And my brother will marry Dunyazad, your sister, and we will live happily ever after. And in that way, all of this eroticism will be restored to the world. So it's very much, it's the task of transforming the impossible man, which we can all relate to. That's right. Half of this audience, well, more than half, the whole audience is nodding. And so the task of transforming the impossible man, nay, the murderous and tyrannical man, It's the man who has murdered his own heart. And we'd say, ah. And in that sense, also, it ties us into the Grail legend as well that lies at the heart of Western mythology, where the land is ill. It is said right at the beginning, up front in the Grail legend, due to the estrangement of masculine and feminine, more than men and women, the abuse of nature and the abuse of rank and privilege. And for that reason, the land is ill, the king is ill, the king is dying. So all of these redemptive stories. So with Scheherazade as our guide this night, with this powerful night, we will offer ourselves to it and journey to the still point. Solstice means sol, sun, stis, stand still. This is the longest night of the year that has been celebrated, we know, for at least 25,000 years. And now we will say, what is what is that cycle and what is unique about now? It's always about, will we survive the winter? And certainly that is strong now for all of us. And we want to gather force, do good juju and work this evening too, so that our prayers for all living creatures who hope to survive the winter, and so that we may indeed survive and rise up as a powerful culture. So setting intention. This is called the Saturnalia also too. It's the festival of Saturn. Saturn is our focus, our definitions of reality. In ancient Greece, the statues of Saturn were chained for whatever patriarchal reason they had, but on the Saturnalia, they were unchained, and the old laws were thrown into the cauldron of the solstice. So this is a time where we get to cast out, as we will, we lay the year to rest, and everything with it that we want to put on that year. We lay our heavy hearts, our griefs, our quabbles, our pettiness, anything, and more profoundly too, as we dive towards the end of this evening, we lay all of that to rest so that it can be rekindle. This is also the birthday of King Arthur. It's the birthday of the hero redeemer within our hearts. And right now we're having King Arthur and Scheherazade and Chiron, whom we'll introduce all these characters. That's the quality of the heroic that wants to be born in each one of our hearts this night as we gather force, send out blessing. And we enter the season of winter, started by Capricorn, which is about work. So we say, let all of us leave this gathering tonight with a clear sense of our work, capital W work. And may we pray for everyone to have meaningful work. You know, 7 million people have been, 7 million more people are out of work since September 11th, not even counting Enron employees. And God knows they could use some meaningful work. So meaningful work that we can gladly contribute our hearts to. So as Bob Marley says, you don't got some work to do, we got some work for you. There's plenty of work to be done. So we want to become intimate collaborators with nature through the power of story. Because with Scheherazade, we enter the whole realm of story, the power of story. And we remember, there's a part of our storytelling souls that remembers that once we humans were not alienated from creation, but understood that we live in a storytelling universe, that everything is talking to us all the time. The candle, the light, the church, the person next to all of it, the leaves, animate, everything is animate, everything is telling its story all the time. That if we but approached it with reverent curiosity as our primary manner of relating, a way of intimacy, then everything would tell us its story. I'm a peanut, I make great sandwiches, all of that. I mean, so the model also of the frame story. The frame story is very, very ancient. It's the overall story within which is a story, within which is a story, within which is a story. And the power of stories is strong. So there's one earlier frame story before the 1001 Arabian Nights, and that's called the Panchatantra, and it comes from India, and it's wonderful also. It's a large story about how to become wise in the world without having to be a saint, and it's all told through animals. And it's a useful advice, you know, better with the learned dwell, even though it be in hell, than with vulgar spirits roam palaces that gods call home. Monster box developments, no. So it also puts before us, too, something very much on the table, the issue of intimacy and survival. The Panchatantra says that it is not so vulgar as to consider money important, and says, and what wise woman or man with a heroic, unique contribution to make to the world would concern themselves with that which is not important? So money must be had in sufficient abundance so that we don't have to think about it. I go, yes, may that be true. We want to make that ashe. And I just have to do a detour. I often prepare a radio show person 2 days ago said, how do you prepare? And I was like, what shall I make up? Many ways in which I prepare, but I also then put my notes out and go to sleep and let the elves rearrange them in keeping with the fairy tale motif. So a sidebar also at this point, too. Many of you who heard the radio show recently know that I am very enthusiastic about the movie Lord of the Rings. It is at last a really strong and a useful frame story. It's a very accurate depiction of now. It's like, all right, this is where we are now. The forces of Enron, the evil forces of Enron, Sauron, you know, all of that. And how we tell the story. And I think, you know, because many of the characters that we're dealing with can best be understood in their costume, the Donald Rumsfeld mask, for instance, as Lord of the Ring characters, shape-shifting into strange monstrosities. And so Rumsfeld does remind me also when he was asked, you know, somebody said, well, who's that guy in the Bin Laden video? And Rumsfeld said, we don't know, but he interests us, you know. You could I heard it on the radio, but you could hear his eyes glittering like. And then there's also a kind of Gollum aspect. Well, I think there's a Gollum aspect to Bush too. He uses a lot of S's and my precious, my father's precious, and I have my precious back. And speaking of Papa, Bush Sr. was recently on TV and said about Robert Walker, the young American who joined the Taliban, at a time when every U.S. citizen was funding the Taliban officials full salary up until 1999. So when Robert Walker joined, the Taliban was, we were funding them. He joined our team. But Bush Sr. said, I have a unique punishment for Robert Walker. Let him go around the country, you know, unwashed with his long hair, and let's see what kind of sympathy he receives here. And we all know, like, we all look like that sometimes, and we have lots of friends who do too. But what a revealing, you know, what a compassionate culture, my goodness. Thank goodness we've come to restore that. So Scheherazade says, you know, before she enters into her agreement, as an act of confident compassion and tricksterishness too, she says, by Allah, O my father, how long shall this slaughter of women endure? And we know that in Afghanistan, many, many things, but as we journey to the heart, the core of creation, the heart of winter this night, and we spiral into the realm of the source of all stories, the bubbling fountain of creation, all stories, dreams, and myths. You know, and Neptune would say to us, we are all part of one large dream, and the greatest illusion is that we're apart, that we could possibly harm one part of creation without it reverberating through our own souls. So everything is real, everything is symbolic, everything is speaking to us in very strong terms. In Afghanistan, every 30 minutes, a woman dies in childbirth. 20% of the children do not reach the age of 5, which is very huge. Now, the model of Scheherazade came to me, or she came to us in the following way, is that one of the frame stories, the astrological frame story of now, is that Saturn, whose festival we celebrate this night, there's a whole crowd of forces within us that we're celebrating. So Saturn is the keeper of the structure, keeper of the frame story in a sense. And Saturn's structure of world is opposite Pluto, death, rebirth, transformation. And on September 11th, we saw that very strongly and very literally. Saturn's structure of world in Gemini, twins, twin towers, Pluto, death, rebirth, in Sagittarius, arrow. We saw the arrow of death go into the twin towers. We saw an incredible act of dedicated symbolism devoted to death. And so we say, well, here's this pattern. We must have an even greater devotion to life. And also, we had symbolism without empathy, without any sense of moisture, kinship to moist-eyed beings, as though it was really like the school kids who blew their classmates away, as though it were a video game, without any limbic sense of kinship. And so we say, this is the heart of the matter that we want to heal and address in ourselves and in the world, this absence of intimacy. And so, in that frame, Saturn opposite Pluto, change or die structure of world, which presides over, it's one of the main frame stories through May of this coming year. And so we say, as astrologers or symbolists, we'd say, Pluto's in Sagittarius. Sagittarius is called ruled by, or an incarnation of Jupiter, the storytelling principle. Where is Jupiter? Jupiter's in Cancer, feminine fertility. Richness. We say some things are always true, but there are moments when they are truer. It is always important, the stories we tell ourselves, but now the stories we tell will root and blossom and bloom, either with poison or with delicious fruit and a whole new world culture, the world tree. So that's why the feminine art of storytelling is crucial to us now, and Scheherazade comes to us in that way. So, you know, and she does her trick when she perceives the dawn of day and sees saying her permitted say. Then, quoth Dunyazade, how wonderful. And what is, you know, and Scheherazade says, and what is this compared with that I could tell thee the night to come if I live and the king spare me? Then thought the king, by Allah, I will not slay her until I hear the rest of her tale, for truly it is wondrous. And then she goes on, it hath reached me, O auspicious king, the tale of Enron and the tale of Zoan. So the model of the frame story also patterns within patterns. It's very much like the beauty in Arabic art, arabesques. Patterns within patterns, fractals. Again, storytelling universe, everything talking to us. And it reminded me also of when I was a teenager and sort of in a Bernadette Devlin fiery religion is, you know, a crutch for the weak and everything sucks. And then someone gave me sacred plants to participate in. And that opened the window of, patterns without, patterns of great beauty within, arabesques in, arabesques out, the swirling, all of that. So we'd say, you know, I call it the first positive responsible drug use, which then later got a little iffy, but still, it liberates and redeems us, you know, into a larger world. The plants tell us their story, and we liberate even the tyrant king of our own selves. There's a wonderful book also that just in the way of synchronicity that someone had loaned me many years ago, actually, and I'd left it lying around as we do. And then once I'd come up with this theme, yes, this is the story that wants to be told. It wants us to tell it. And the book is called On the Road to Baghdad by a Turkish writer named Gun Ali Gun. And it contains the story of Scheherazade and Huru also. Huru is a main character. And it's all about storytelling, and that was how wonderful. And it's the theme of telling the story as though we had gentle hearts and thereby creating an audience of gentle hearts. And Neptune also would say to us as a crucial strategy, we're invited to be the thing that we want to create. Meaning, when I was also wondering about where should I do solstice, where does it want to happen, let me talk to it. And a friend said, well, why don't you imagine becoming the solstice, become the still point, and from that point there'll be no decision, it will become clear. I thought, what a good idea. You know, if we want to help water, we become like water. We want to help wolves, become like wolves. This shape-shifting capacity that fairy tales allow us and remind us of, animals always changing into humans, humans into animals, back and forth, that we're all one fluctuating, large, permeable part. And as we come to the core, we go, well, let's play with this. One of the ways of shape-shifting metaphor, we'd say we have heavy hearts at the end of the year to lay down and to transform. And the Saturn, Neptune, and cahoots would say very often that heavy burden, we think it's the problem. But on this night, the planets would say to us, no, it's actually the solution. It's your magic backpack you've been wearing for 45 years, and it's very heavy. Why don't you take it off? And open it up and see what's inside. You go, what's inside is all stories and galaxies and the power of imagination and visualization. And that's what we do. I mean, it's Santa Claus, really. That's behind the thing. Presents for all of us tonight. This night, we lay down the burden that we thought was our problem. But in fact, again, it's the weight of the magic backpack. We go, we are infinite. Our powers of imagination are what is divine. You know, Neptune says it's a great misreading, incapacity, literalized incapacity to read myth when people hear, you know, that we are made in God's image. It does not mean we look like old white guys with beards. It means we are dreamed in the imagination of the divine, and that dreaming is our way of participating, is the divine part of us that participates in creating the world. And Neptune would say we journey back into intimacy once again, too. One, by being able to read the world symbolically, to understand that it is speaking to us all the time. That's the contemplative aspect. And the dynamic aspect is then entering, going to that still point that we're journeying to right now, so that we then assume imaginative responsibility for dreaming the world into being. How do we want it to be? And Jupiter in Cancer would say, and what do we want it to feel like? What do we want each one of us to feel like by May? It's like throwing a positive grappling hook into the spring that's on the other side of this winter we travel through. So Neptune would say a unifying vision and aspiration. We'd say also that Neptune, the liberating powers of imagination available this night, that the divine itself wants to be liberated from previous confines of human imagination. You know, all this big, I don't know how many of you saw the Onion or see the Onion magazine online sometimes, but after September 11th, they were pretty good on the edge too. They had a Newsweek. I'll have to censor words because this will be, well, we'll let the editor do it. They had the Newsweek cover, which was basically holy fucking shit. Within which they had an interview with God. And God said, look, just don't kill each other, all right? It's that simple. Just don't kill each other. Just cut it out. It's very simple. So at the heart of the Arabian Nights stories, also with that, we go back to what is the origin of all conflict? And the Arabian Nights would say it's erotic. It's suppression of the erotic. But it's also the estrangement of Eros from the heart. And read symbolically, the women were estranged from their eroticism, was estranged from their heart as much as the men's. And this fundamental conflict between Eros and heart, underneath the cruelty is the desire for love in all of the stories. So it's also, again, just that impulse, too. It's like, you know, we'd say what's very largely alive in the world, too, on a kind of masculine-feminine level is like, oh, feminine wild abandon, because that's what makes these men insane at the beginning of the frame story. This lusty feminine abandon, like, whoa. And they go, oh, I want it. No, I hate it. No, yes, no, yes, no. Oh, no, I will go to war. No, I will kill everything. So if we can journey back to that, you know, so, you know, On the Road to Baghdad says, the world is run by those who can't make love, the dervish said, or those who do it badly. That's why the world's in trouble. Yes. And a wise colleague who was here tonight also years ago said, God gave us sex to make up for having to be here. So also, friends of mine who have the Al-Qaeda handbook training manual say that, I mean literally, that the initiation into Al-Qaeda is a marriage ceremony. You marry Muhammad, you marry the man. And so we go, that's interesting too. Another friend of mine, wonderful Scorpio friend, Scorpios are good on this one, said, if you go on Google on a search and you put in Mecca, the third listing will take you to the Kaaba, the most sacred object, the only sacred object in Islam. And the picture of the Kaaba that you can find there, it's a black stone, the object of all Islamic pilgrimage. And in the black stone is a silver, very clear yoni. It's a feminine vulva right where the pilgrims kiss the rock. I go, well, that's pretty interesting too. And in Mecca, there were many, many, many objects of worship, and Muhammad got rid of all of them except for the Kaaba. And as my Scorpio ally says, it's men worshiping mom and calling it dad again. So if we think of this the conflict, like, no, I want to worship mom, but I will call it dad, and no, and I want women, so I will kill them. No, I don't. And the murder... A great writer, Muhammad Iqbal, at the turn of the century said, Asia is a living body and Afghanistan its heart. In the ruin of the heart lies the ruin of the body. So long as the heart is free, the body remains free. If not, it becomes a straw adrift in the world. So we say Scheherazade, Jupiter and Cancer, the call to life, away from the brink, empathy, water, the waters of life. Because Jupiter and Cancer would say to us, would remind us of what we remember too, that once we would have measured the evolution of any civilization by what it cancered, what it nourished, cultivated, and protected. Its children, its environment, its storytellers, elders, all of that. And so by that measure, of course, we live in a completely insane world. Because not only are those things which any civilization up until industrialism would have most closely treasured, those things are all slungshot into vulnerability. Like, here you go, out there. So there's a wonderful story, again, the stories within the stories, the fractal stories. And this is also resonant, too, because way back in early plant sacrament days in the 60s, I had a great experience with many really wonderful people. We decided to climb Mount Musilak in New Hampshire and drop sacred sacrament at the top. What a good idea. And it was an excellent idea. There were many people that you would now know as famous good-hearted contributors to the world there then. And we gathered wild blueberries and made wild blueberry soup, and a great storm came up, and we took refuge in a little teeny tin-roofed cabin. And there a wonderful colleague told us by heart a longer version of the story I'm about to tell you, of the magic mountain, the talking bird, the singing tree, and the golden waters of life. And so there's the Scheherazade story, and then within that, these stories of women redeemers. And so I had to call my brother. I have the 6-volume set of the Arabian Nights, but that's the short version. And many of the women are edited out. My brother has the 20-volume version, so that's where you got to go. So I got this revived, the tale. And it's the tale of the talking bird, the magic mountain, the singing tree, and the water, the golden waters of life. The short version is like this. There are three sisters, and they are confiding in each other their secret dreams and hopes. And Harun al-Rashid is a character in the Arabian Nights. He's a king who often dons, you know, a cloak and walks throughout the city streets to see what's what. And he overhears the three sisters saying their most cherished dream. And one sister says, I want to marry the Shah's cook, and that way I will have tasty things all the time. Yum, 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 yum. And the other one says, I want to marry the Shah's masseuse, and that way I will never have back problems. It'll be great. And the third youngest sister says, I want to marry the Shah, and I will give him 3 children. And they will all be wonderful. They will be equally wonderful. And one of them will be a daughter who is educated and wise and redemptive and powerful. And so Harun al-Rashid goes back to his castle, summons the three sisters, and says, I will grant all your wishes. You know, you marry the cook, you marry the masseuse, and you marry me. and the other two sisters, just like in Psyche, as they often are in fairy tales, are like, ah, phooey. That's the problem of asking for too little. Jupiter in Cancer says, you know, or Jupiter in Cancer in the form of great Harlem preacher Reverend Ike says, you can go to the ocean with a thimble or a bucket, but the ocean thinks you're an idiot if you say, oh ocean, please give me a thimble full of water. You know, it's like, how large can you get? So the sisters are very jealous, and the youngest sister is delighted. She soon becomes great with child. The sisters insist on being her midwife. So she gives birth to a beautiful baby. They take the baby, toss it in the river. Instead put a hedgehog in its place. And the king is puzzled, like, hedgehog? Okay. But oh well, we'll try again. So soon enough, it's Princess Parizada. No, sorry, I'm leaping ahead. So the queen has another child, a beautiful baby. The midwife sisters throw it in the river. And they put a goat in its place. And the king goes, a goat? Never mind, we'll try again. So another baby is born, tossed into the river, and they put a cow in its place. And the Shah says, that does it, this is just, what have I married? I've married this terrible witch, you know, I will put her in the public courtyard, and everyone should spit on her, and if you don't spit on her, then your punishment will be the same as yours, because we're in this really grim story. But meanwhile, the babies have been picked up one by one by the gardener who's taken them in. And says, oh, another baby, amazing. And they are raised, and they are all quite wonderful, but the most wonderful, of course, is Princess Parizada, which means fairy born. She is between worlds, she is a transitional figure. And they have a wonderful life, and Princess Parizada makes the house incredibly beautiful. And one day a wise dervish woman comes, and Parizada says, it's not our house, our life is wonderful, isn't it? And the wise dervish woman says, yes, but you would be even more wonderful if you had the talking bird, the singing tree, and the golden waters of life. Ah, well, we must go about that. So the problem of having a feng shui consultant come to your house, you go, oh, it's not enough, never enough. Okay, so the boys go, well, we will go first, one at a time. And the first one sets forth and says, I leave behind a dagger. If it turns red, it means I'm dead. Let's hope not. So he goes off, it turns red. Oh, dear, oh, no. The next brother goes forth, a string of pearls I leave behind me. If it breaks, it means I'm dead. But it breaks. Oh, it's all is left is Princess Parizada. So she sets forth, and she comes to the bottom of a mountain. There's a dervish sitting at the bottom, and he says, oh, you, okay, here's the deal. Go up the mountain, and there will be these voices that are terrifying and scary, and they will be hurtling insults at you. Don't turn around, as is so often the admonition in fairy tales. Don't turn around. And Princess Parizada says, "Do you have any earwax I could put in my ears?" "No one has ever thought of that," says the dervish. "That's incredible. Sure, here you go." So as she makes her way up, she sees, you know, all these countless figures turned to stone, because that's what's happened when they would turn around. And again, it goes into great detail about the insults that the men heroes were unable to resist. You know, "Hey, pencil dick, what? Just stoned." So Princess Parizada goes, and she through great adventures, it goes on and on and on, but she finds the speaking bird, and the speaking bird tells her the whole deal and says, "You don't have to cut down the whole tree, just take a little cutting from the singing tree, which is glorious, and take it home and plant it, it will root. And the golden water," and she says, and here you go, "the golden water that will nourish the land, and it's whatever, wherever you put it, it's continually replenishing, its moisture, the land will come alive, everything." She says, "Well, this is nothing without my brothers." He says, "Just put some water on your brothers and that'll be fine." So she goes down the mountain, and not only does she liberate her brothers, but all the figures of stone, all the murdered hearts, all those who couldn't take insults, who got huffy and turned rigid, she brings them all back to life. And they're like, "Hooray, hooray, Princess Parizada, how wonderful." So she gets back there, and the boys go hunting, and they encounter the Shah, and he feels some strange, and it is put this way, he meets these young boys, and he feels some strange, erotic attraction. He goes, "Oh, how kinky, no, this is terrible, but I must investigate further." He's their father, so they invite him back to lunch, and Parizada talks to the talking bird, and the talking bird says, "For the Shah, prepare a dish of cucumbers and pearls." And so she does, and the Shah says, "This is passing strange, cucumbers and pearls," and the talking bird says, "Cucumbers and pearls are passing strange, and yet a woman giving birth to a hedgehog, a cow, and a goat is not strange, you idiot, you fool." He goes, "Oh my God, my children, I've been a dingbat." Okay, so that is the important story, the story within the story. So we'd say, the liberation, there's many things there. In also the road to Baghdad, talks about the ancients had been thinking unimpeded before the big religion set in. So neither of Huru's parents, the physician nor his good wife, held any commerce with unexamined beliefs, nor did they practice religion that manifested itself in brutality against others. We're journeying back, again, deep delving back to intimacy. It also says that the dervish said, "Hell is always there, but it's only the entranced who go through it lovingly." So I go, it's our manner of traipsing through the world is our manner of bringing back paradise as well, too, this restoration of intimacy. And part of what we quicken also this night, too, this theme of ally etiquette, you know, what is the redemption of the world? Princess Parizada, Scheherazade, treats everyone really in the manner of an equal, which is why things go so well in the tales for them. They speak, they heed the advice of the wise dervish, they talk to everything, and the talking bird. And the singing tree, as all trees are, as all birds are, as all water is meant to be shared, as it is always replenishing. So this theme also, you know, many of you may have heard me say this before, but Uranus, this principle of quickening and electricity and aliveness and reinvention, also alive in us this night. The last ideas associated with it are democracy, equality, synchronicity. And the message to us from that string of pearls is that when we treat each other as equals, regardless of our temporary assignments of gender or status or wealth or not, or wisdom or not, or who's talking or not, when we treat each other equally, then the rate of synchronicity increases dramatically. Right person at the right time, right funding, right this. And this is what gives the transformation of culture a sporting chance, which is, we might say, the forces of Sauron and Enron and, you know, all of that, and Carlyle, and the "It Has Reached Me, O King," the tale of Carlyle Group. I mean, all of those may have more money and more lawyers and more organization, according to Danny Sheehan. And so we do want to get more organized, at least more organized than everybody. But if we treat each other well, then the path opens. The power of synchronicity opens before us. This manner of relating. And again, Venus, the other principle of intimacy, would say, is our manner of relating an offering or an imposition? And Saturn also this night would say, we want to grow the forms of meaningful work. We want to grow the forms that most serve life, rather than to impose forms on top. We're laying to rest this night. Dominator virus culture. Can I eat it, own it, control it, kill it? You know, impose upon it, dominate it. Rather than what we're giving birth to, cooperate, collaborate. So, you know, there's a saying also, I forgot which wise woman said, as long as God is a guy, guys will be God. So we'd say we want a democratic mythology as well. And part of the rhythm of now is that it's described that this, for the first time ever, we're being invited to co-create with the spirits, with the dream world, with everything, an all-inclusive, all-invitational, embracing mythology of egalitarian. We say the forces of the divine needs us for its incarnation. We need it. You know, we need to collaborate with the wolves, the coyotes, those who've died this year, all of it. And that it is more than perfect that we as humans cannot resolve the tremendous irreverent conundrums that we've invoked by ourselves. It requires inviting back in that which has been most exiled, which is intimacy. Intimacy with creation and cooperating with everything. So we have to cooperate in order to create a cooperative culture. All of that. So this honoring the dead we want to do also too. This is traditionally a time when we honor the dead who have died in this year that we lay to rest this night. So there are many great teammates who have left the stage. George Harrison, as a friend of mine who knew him says, you know, well done, lad, you know, good theme. This also, the theme of Lord of the Rings, in 1965-66 was the last time that Saturn opposed Pluto, and now it opposes Pluto again. And 65-66 was when The Lord of the Rings came out, and it came out many years earlier to, you know, it was only published 3,500 copies and didn't sell very well, which I think should give hope to all of us aspiring authors. Wait for the next rhythm. Saturn opposite Pluto, then 65-66, everybody reads it, becomes the frame story. It's also when we have the last time maybe an external culture, the Beatles, the frame stories that were outer representations of inner collective reality. And we're having that again, but we're also invited even more to liberate that, to have culture as that again too. So we can't do it alone. We invite in all those who died this year. There's George Harrison, a man also, a great fellow, Sir Peter Blake, who was a great New Zealand national sailing hero, who left all that some years ago to work on water and the environment and saving the world. And he was slain by pirates on the Amazon some weeks ago. His last journal entry reads this: why are we here? The quality of water and the quality of life in all its infinite forms are critical parts of the overall ongoing health of this planet of ours, not just here in the Amazon, but everywhere. The hardest part of any big project is to begin. We have begun. We are underway. We have a passion. We want to make a difference. And now I'm going to go die. So he did, but he left it to us. Ken Kesey also has left the stage, who said, our job is nothing less than to save the world. You know, the magic bus is there on the other side, and we want to call it in as well. So there's all those who died September 11th, each creature equally valuable. There are the 4,000 civilians who have died in Afghanistan since September 11th. There are the people who just died in Argentina yesterday. All of the dead, and Pluto would say to us, we cannot live through the dead, but we can invite the dead to live through us. And also very poignant, again, our theme of meaningful work, we also want to honor the dead, the two Tyson chicken workers who died from methane gas after falling into a giant vat of chicken parts. You can go, oh my God, the horror of how we treat animals and how we treat humans. A crucial part of the fairy tale motif available for us now as well is that in many of the redemptive stories, the hero or heroine will set forth, and they often have a magic animal. In fact, it's crucial. There's a magic animal almost always in the stories. And often it's a humble shaggy pony. And the shaggy pony knows how to ford the burning river and how to climb the glass mountain. And we say that the magic animal, how we treat animals in the world, is how we treat our own Mars, our own instincts. And that the magic animal is an animation of our own heroism and our own eros as well. And so at a crucial juncture in the story, the wise heroine, the wise hero, who has much to do, must let the reins go slack on the pony, because the pony knows how to do these amazing, impossible things that the mind is completely daunted by. Like, oh, save the world, make a living, how can I do these things? It's like the pony knows. Let the reins go slack. It's in keeping with the cultural transformation we want to embody, which is not tight, not control. At certain crucial moments, we let the reins go slack, so that the pony, the wise pony within, and our treatment of creatures without, can do the impossible thing as well. So this brings us also to the realm of music, the power of music. In the 16th century, Suleiman's brother was called Sultan the Divine Fool, king of poets, and he was famous for his songs of magical protest. Like we want to bring alive again as well, too. Magical protest in the service of life, they were songs of great beauty. The report comes down through the ages. It was said that in his songs, spirit marries the life of the senses in such ecstatic purity as to transform the singer and the listener and to dissolve the distance between them. And his songs were called breaths. So part of the power of now and the power of the heart of this evening that we share with each other, too, is that we'd say that we're in the very, very end of the year cycle, the waning, waning, waning cycle. From the summer solstice in June, we'd say almost the way energy spirals around is counterclockwise. It comes into us, counterclockwise radiates out from us. Again, wise colleague says, relax, the chi is unlimited. It's one of the first Kabbalistic meditations I was ever taught, was to imagine each day receiving abundant energy from above and below and from the east and the west and the north and the south, and then in turn blessing all creatures above, below, east, west, north, south. And the admonition was, if it feels like the slightest bit of effort, that's not it. It's in, out. We live in a generous, again, circulating, storytelling, replenishing, golden waters, you know, universe, in and out. So at this point, we're also going to, at the heart of our evening, spiral in. It's the spiraling into the still point from which we will gather great force and invite in all exiled beauty to come be allies with us. And that's our reset button, right into the still point, the hara. And then from that, it's clockwise. We receive clockwise. We send out clockwise. We then enter into the whole creative domain. So Scheherazade spirals us out of oppositional mythology and the thoughts and feelings and actions it engenders. Because as we get to banishing also too, we'd say Saturn opposite Pluto says, well, what do we want to die to if we do not, if we are not to die from it? We go all opposition, all face off, us, them. You're either with us or with the terrorists. You're either this or an infidel. And I think it's important also, God knows, you know, as Swami Vivekananda says, we are in a culture which is irony deficiency. We want to move certain phrases out into the vernacular. So when Osama bin Ashcroft and then Bush was mouthing him, was saying, we can't tell you the names of the people, the Arabs that we've detained, because it might harm them. No, let's see. We can't tell you the names of the people we've detained because it might help the terrorists. And I thought, well, we should move this out, you know, into the phrase, anything that we really don't want to do. You know, I'd like to have lunch with you, but it might help the terrorists, so I can't. I'd like to tell you the price of lettuce, but it might help the terrorists, you know, so... So all of that oppositional face-off, you know, so we're about to, with the help of the gorgeous Ida Maxime, journey to the still point from which we summon back into our hearts all exiled beauty, coming home incarnate into the structure of our lives. You know, the birth of the hero redeemer this night in each one of us, what do we invite in to incarnate? In what form? Our most, you know, wildest mythological potent self is hovering also right behind us, and before evening's end will step into us as well. So this is the great song in which we come to the still point and invite in all exiled beauty back into the world. Because Venus would say to us, we don't need to source anything. It's like the golden waters of life. We have only to invite it in. We don't need to be strong, but to invite in strength. We don't need to be wise, but to invite in wisdom. We don't need the solution, but to invite in the solution. Again, it's this collaborative domain. Spirit operators standing by at all moments going, look, they finally asked. Let's send them a rainbow. God, okay. So much beauty in this world. That's, I first heard Ida do that when we did our first collaborative endeavor right after September 11th. Strong, strong. And again, just I've always loved Middle Eastern dance from earliest on. and the resonating with it too, and just that sense of invoking, inviting, that like all trivialized things, the Middle Eastern dance always was about inviting in, bringing in the force really strong, and the positive aspect of Eros, kinship with everything. And good news has reached us today, oh audience of the age, that many of us know the travails of indigenous people all around the world, especially around the issues of oil, and the Uwa people in Colombia. And this also in keeping with our aspiration to wed spiritual magic and to know we can do nothing alone, only in collaboration with nature. Again, a great phrase, only those serving an apprenticeship to nature can be trusted with machines. So the Uwa in Colombia, if only Al Gore had talked to them, he might have actually been allowed to win the election, but he wouldn't. So Standard Oil, as many of us know, Standard Oil has been planning on drilling in the Uwa. I've said they would kill themselves if their homeland was destroyed. But they've taken a different tactic, which has worked, which is the Uwa for the last 6 months have been praying for the oil to hide itself. And it did. Standard Oil has been unable to find the oil. They've been drilling several places and going, and you are going, oil, oil, hide, hide, hide. What a good idea. You know, so praying for the oil, that's not a bad idea. We could lend ourselves to that. Pray for the oil. Hide, hide, run, go. It's also in years ago when I first met very strong Hawaiian friends who were activists also too, and they introduced me to Pele, the volcano goddess, where you can go and sit in her caves and underground tunnels. And so whenever bad projects were planned, there was a particularly bad project being planned in Hawaii to destroy virgin rainforest for a power plant. And so the Hawaiian people would go and pray to Pele, we let us enter into an alliance. We offer ourselves as an incarnational vessel for you, and we give you energy also too. This collaboration between worlds, crucial, this democratic mythology. The gods, the forces of nature need us, we need them. It's all a working collaboration. It's crucial. It's again, this comes from wonderful Robinette Kennedy, who teaches trance postures, very strong tradition that goes back, that was noticed and rediscovered that there are postures in statues, shamanic statues around the world, that very interesting, that have a commonality, and very interesting things happen when you adopt those postures. And I've been in rooms where people would adopt the postures, not told what they were, you know, and then with trance inducing drumming. And everyone would say, oh, I felt like I was flying, and that was the eagle posture. So after a workshop, we'd been doing one particularly strong posture, and she passed around a picture of a statue in this posture and said, this is mislabeled goddess. And she said this startling thing. She said, there was no goddess worship in the Mediterranean. I was like, whoa, what ho? And she said, no. Not in that sense of worship that we've come to understand it in the modern world. There was no matriarchy. The problem is archy. I said, well, I've been lecturing about this wrong for years. What do you mean? How interesting. There's a great surge when we change our minds about something, like, oh, years of work, no, wrong. Ah, what a relief. Changing minds is good. And in